Hare Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryankara Vavahai Tejasvi Navadhidhamastrama Virvishavahai Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
I think we're on the, still on the first page or second?
Bottom of 10.
Bottom of 10. The unalloyed Krishna Prema.
Yes, meaning? We're supposed to go to page 11.
Okay. Unalloyed Krishna Prema is the pure, true, and original Dharma of the Jiva. When perverted, this spiritual love manifests in the subtle body as the mundane emotions of happiness and sorrow, love and hate, and so on. In the gross body, the perversion intensifies even more and displays itself in the shape of material sense gratification and other activities for bodily preservation and enjoyment, such as eating, drinking, and sensuality. Right, so, in other words, the prema, that's the natural position of the living entity, but that itself then gets perverted. When we say perverted in the material world, we're meaning this mentality. Right? The mechanics aren't so much different, just of an inferior quality. Right? You know, just like you may have, you know, how you say, a very nice piece of equipment or a very not so nice, you know, something very cheap. Mechanically, they're basically the same, how they function. But just the quality of how they work, you know, the reliability, you know, what results they give, that's the difference between the spiritual and the material world. Right? So the main focus is on actually the emotional content. Right, the emotional content of the spiritual world is superior because it's based on prema, while the material is inferior because it's based on how you say happiness, sorrow, love, hate, all these different things. Does that make sense?
So basically, yes. The only thing that changes when we say perversion is the quality.
Yes, means then it can be intensified further. Then you see the activities in that, though they're in the mechanics, but it's simply for oneself. Right, because the emotions generally aren't connected with others, but it's centered around yourself. But the bodily functions then become even more, so it just becomes more and more. But then you can pervert that by then not following the Vedic system. Then you get a perversion of the perversion.
So that would be using something for something it's not meant to be used for.
Yes, then you're dealing with adharma on the level of piety. Then you have dharma on the level of piety. Then you have its actual original form is bhakti. You understand? It means when the devotion is there, the form matches that. That's what it's for. Mm-hmm. When you use the form but don't have the mentality of devotion, then it becomes pious activities. Mm-hmm. Right? When then you don't follow the pious, means you don't have the proper mentality and you don't follow the activity, that becomes impious. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's considered the most perverted. Yeah.
How can you say that the spiritual love manifests in the subtle body as those emotions, while those emotions are external arrangements so that Jiva can identify with it?
Yeah, well, that's the point, is in the spiritual world it's the natural love. Here, then, the modes of nature have to arrange something that looks like that. Otherwise, you get bored. Because how do you have emotions with dead matter?
Yes, yes.
Huh? You understand? There is no motions with dead matter. So that's why the modes of nature have to make it appear that that's what's happening.
But why does he say that? Why does he say that it's spiritual love in this motion?
Because that's what's perverted.
The perversion is the object, right? Instead of Krishna, it's something else.
Yes. So that's a problem?
No, I'm trying to comprehend.
See, rasa is rasa. The point is it's either directed at Krishna or directed at others in the material world on the emotional platform or directed at the senses. But the function of rasa is the same. It doesn't change. So its natural form is devotion. Then the perverted form is the material emotions. Right? Then more intensified than that is the physical sensual interaction. Does that make sense? Right. So that's how much we're basically talking about. Then if you don't even follow the natural course of rasa, then you get, you know, your impious activities. Right? So that's why it said pious activities are engaged in the Lord's service. Only because then the form and the emotions that go with it are in its natural state. But what you're changing, what makes it devotional, is that emotion that's being displayed is being directed at Krishna rather than ourselves. Does that make sense? Yeah?
So could we say that sense gratification is actually a perversion of the perversion of the perversion of the perversion?
No, sense gratification is just the engagement of the senses. That means this perversion intensifies. It doesn't mean it perverts.
Okay.
If you go into sinful, then you're perverting again. You understand?
Yeah, but isn't sense gratification sinful inherently?
No, engaging the senses, that's called sense gratification.
Oh, okay.
It just means the senses are being engaged.
Okay.
Now, it's labeled as sense gratification if Krishna is not involved. If Krishna is involved, it's called devotional service. When you serve Krishna, what do you serve Krishna through?
The senses.
So that's the whole point, is that the emotions are there, then it becomes expressed through the senses. It becomes intensified. So in the same way in the material, when you drop the level of rasa down into the emotional, you know, on the material platform, then it becomes intensified through the senses.
Mm.
Right? The mechanics are the same.
Mm.
Right? The difference is whether it's actually connected to Krishna or not. Does that make sense? Right? Yes.
Body preservation, you see the body as oneself.
Yes. Yes, so you try to, you know, make arrangements for the body and make everything nice for the body and everything. So it's all about the body. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Let's say you put on a certain color of cloth. Then one of the things that one of the aspects you look at it, how it matches the body. You know what I'm saying? The particular situation of the body, you see, do the clothes match that, you know, in the way of the shape of it or the color of it, or, you understand? So you have to see that it matches the body, right? And then we intensify that by the paraphernalia, then has to match the clothes. You understand? So it just keeps going and intensifies. That's why, does that make sense? So that's what each thing is there's the emotional state, then you have what that emotional state is expressed in, then the paraphernalia that supports that. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you get the clothes, so then you have the clothes, then you need the shoes, then you have to have a place to put the shoes, so you have to have the walk-in place where it goes in and they slide out, and you can see them all, right? You know what I'm saying? It just keeps going. You know, and then that must, you know, that big of a place must be in a big house. A big house must be in a good location. That location must be in the right city, right? The right country, right? You know, generally you don't have to worry about planet. That's pretty well worked out. You know, you've got this one to work with. Does that make sense? Yes.
Well, this mental and sensual aversion the same as what's referred to as Swargiya Rasa and Pratyeva Rasa?
Yes. Swargiya means the heavenly planets. That means that emotional state. Pratyeva means the earthly, just means the sensual. So you have Vaikuntha Rasa, which is the Rasa of Vaikuntha. Then you have Pratyeva, the Rasa of the heavenly planets, sort of emotions. Right? Then you have Pratyeva, which is just the earthly, just the, you know, the senses and sense objects. Okay. So the point is, when you're saying this, it's where it's focused. It's not that in the spiritual platform there's no emotions, there's no engagement with the senses. Just the focus is on Krishna, so therefore it's prema. But when the focus is just on my emotions, it's called Pratyeva. Or, you know, like that, the exchange. When the focus is on the sensual interaction, then it's called Pratyeva. Right? Does that make sense? So all that is just the perversion comes when the Vaikuntha comes down to Pratyeva, or Swargiya or Pratyeva. Right? It means the heavenly or the earthly. So that's perversion. But then, of that, the heavenly is higher than the earthly. All the religions of the world may be broadly grouped into three categories. One, Nitya Dharma. Two, Naimittic Dharma. And Anitya Dharma. A religion that denies the existence of Ishwara, refusing to discuss him, and that does not accept that the soul is eternal, is Anitya Dharma. False Dharma, contradictory to eternal Dharma. Right? So if you don't accept the existence of God, you don't understand that the soul is eternal, right? Then that's just anitya. It doesn't have actually anything to do with actual religion. That's just basically totally bogus. There's nothing there to work with. It means you can sift through it and get some qualities, but it's not, you can't really attribute those to that religious process, right? Because the process is you're trying to define what is God, what is the living entity, and what is material nature. Yes.
I think Jehovah's Witnesses say that the soul dies and the body lives on.
The soul dies, yeah, and the body lives on.
In the heaven with all the kids and the animals.
So,
happy.
And what happens to the soul? The soul's not there. It's just animated bodies. You know, some kind of thing like from the bubonic plague cartoons or something like that. Just bodies dancing around that are dead, right?
Yeah, I don't know. So I was asking.
That part, you know.
So that's anitya dharma.
That would be anitya. Yeah. Means if they accept that God is there, that part may have the, that would be the, what do you call it, naimittic.
Yeah.
But it's got those elements of it. It has a respect for the nitya aspect, but it doesn't have much knowledge. But then these others, that's anitya. So that's why it says the soul is eternal. So basically, for many, then they don't know where the soul comes from, right? Basically, for all of them, it comes from nature itself. Mm. Matter combined in a certain way produces consciousness, right? You know, that's the whole thing. So, scientist is there, he's mixing his chemicals, you know, he doesn't quite finish his experiment, he gets tired for the night, you know, turns off the light, goes out, and then after he leaves the room, then somehow his little bottle of chemicals just comes to life, you know.
Music starts.
You know, yeah, like that. You know, then does that make sense? You know, then you end up with the tomato that ate Chicago, or you know, something, you know, like that. Like that. So that's what they think. It's just a combination of matter. So when the combination isn't fit anymore, then the consciousness stops.
Yeah.
Not that they're two different things. So that part generally is anitya in most all philosophies and religions, at least philosophies. Right? So, because even the Maya bodies, it's anitya dharma.
Mm.
Because the soul doesn't exist. Mm. There is only Brahman. We just, in illusion, think the soul is separate, but actually we're part of the big Brahman. So that means, again, the concept of individual consciousness and that of the jiva has come from material nature. So the Maya bodies have, in that case, the same philosophy as the karmis.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, the only difference is the karmis are still optimistic that you can enjoy, And the Maya bodies are pessimistic. That's the main definition. So you get the karmas and the jnanis. But otherwise, basically, it's the same thing. A religion that believes in the eternality of both the Ishwar and the Jivas, but prescribes mundane methods such as karma, jnana, and yoga for attaining the grace of Ishwar, is Naimittic Dharma. Right? So here it's saying Ishwar and Jivas. So even technically there, even though that aspect itself may be nitya within it, that it accepts the eternality of God, but not of the Jivas, then technically overall the religion is Anitya Dharma. Because only naimittic means it accepts both, but it's using the process of karma, jnana, and yoga to obtain the Lord.
Yeah.
Right? It's not using bhakti, it's using karma, jnana, yoga. Right? Yes.
So now I think the second category is what we call the paramatma-realization.
Yeah, paramatma-realization, Brahman, all these different things that are generally your standard religious processes that are derived from the Veda, because they accept the eternality of God, like Nyaya accepts the eternality of God and the Jiva. But the problem is their process is through logic. Right? So then it becomes naimittic. You know what I'm saying? Like that. But then you have ones that are not even real, so Shankara's philosophy is actually not even real. It's a trick. You know, Buddhism isn't real. It's not actual religion because it doesn't accept the eternality of God and the Jiva. Right? Does that make sense? Material energy is an energy is eternal, but its manifestation is temporary. So we're interacting with the temporary, so that's why we're not saying that the understanding of that of being eternal. Right? Because if you understand Krishna's eternal, you're eternal, you have that natural relationship, but the material world is temporary. You can still go back to Godhead, even if you don't understand. Well, technically, the energy is eternal, though it manifests, then you can see it, and sometimes it doesn't. Right? That'll be a side point. Right? Religions that prescribe pure, unmotivated eternal devotional service to the Ishwar on the platform of prema are Nitya Dharma. Right? So these are the three categories. It doesn't mean you can't have a mix of the categories. You understand?
Yeah.
So it's just like you have the atheistic religions, which will be in the first category, Anitya Dharma. Right? Then you have those that are a mix of Anitya and Naimittic. Right? They accept some aspect of eternality and some aspect of not. Right? And then you'll have those that accept the naimittic and the nitya. You know, so that's mixed devotional service. Then it's just the nitya. So then that's pure devotional service. Yes.
And so we as devotees also have our own little mix.
Yeah.
Because you get attached to different forms of devotion.
Well, that's just depending upon your naimittic conditioning.
Yeah.
Then that will be added to the mix of Nitya Dharma. So that's why then different, you know, devotees have different peculiarities, you know, like that. But where they don't have, that's generally where they advance quickly. You know, so that, in other words, where you advance quickly is where someone else is slower to advance. And where you advance slowly is where they're generally quickly. It just depends upon what your conditioning is.
Nitya Dharma is like
Jiva Dharma? Nitya Dharma just means pure devotional service.
And Jiva Dharma means?
Jiva Dharma means, yeah, the eternal religion. Same basic. Because what Jiva Dharma is explaining is what the actual Nitya Dharma is. Like that. But to do that, you must understand everything. So then all the aspects of whatever philosophy and everything is there, then it covers.
Sanatana Dharma? Is there a...
Sanatana Dharma and Nitya Dharma are the same thing. Sanatana just means eternal, Nitya means eternal. Like that. Nitya Dharma may be given various names, depending on country, race, language, and so on. Yet, it is one in essence, excels all mundane preconditions, and is supremely beneficial for the jiva. The best example of Nitya Dharma is Vaishnavism, which is widely practiced in India, the purest state of which is the spiritual teachings propagated to the entire world by our beloved Sri Sachinanda. Because right? Because the others are nitya dharma, right? But there's an element that it will be pure devotional service, but not necessarily pure unalloyed devotional service. That's why he says the purest form. Yeah. So you have within spiritual, it means all spiritual is pure. Then you have purer and purest, like that. Like that.
The best example of nitya dharma is Vaishnavism.
Yes.
Are there other examples?
We'll see as they go through. But in other words, they'll be asked, just like Prabhupada when he was in Australia, he was discussing with, I think he went to a monastery there and he was discussing with the monks. So his lecture was about developing pure love for God. And they were quite comfortable with that. They were, you know, inspired. Because for many of the religions of the world, the idea of developing love for God and having an internal relationship based on that is a common element, though they may not dwell on it much. You know, they dwell more on being good and being nice and, you know, praying to God to, how do you say?
Give them bread.
Yeah, give them bread and, you know, whatever else is, you know. You know, you don't want to walk to the market, so then, you know,
car,
a Mercedes Benz or a motorcycle, you know, something, you know, like that you have for going. So all these different things are there. That's the naimittic element. So the thing is even though the ideal is the nitya, but the forms that they use, then it's based on the importance of the naimittic. Well, the Vaishnavism will engage the naimittic, but it's always secondary. It doesn't become primary. You know, that's why Prabhupada will talk about God as the order supplier. Because then you have the nitya mixed with karma, where you're approaching God, but you want all your material things. So if it's done through the Vaishnava, then it's quite dynamic. You know, very quickly the material desires are dealt with, fulfilled, and removed. But in the other forms, because the emphasis is so much there, and the element of prema is so much kind of in the background, then it's not necessarily you focus enough to become purified that you move forward. Does that make sense? Yes.
Whereas Bhagavad Gita is refuting the various anicca dharmas and then showing how to engage naimittic dharma, so it becomes under the platform of anicca dharma.
Yeah, but it's not here so much of the naimittic dharmas meaning as religions of the world. See, there is naimittic dharma and nitya dharma being applied within world religions here, but within the individual, within the category, you can also apply them. You know what I'm saying? So the Vaishnavism, you know, which is in the category of the nitya dharma, the predominance will be, the focus is all on nitya dharma, and you're using the naimittic in the Lord's service, right? But when you drop down to the naimittic dharma, they have the concept of the nitya, but the focus is on the naimittic. So it's all about having a nice arrangement, and if you're pious, then you'll have a good life, and if something bad, because you're not pious, so you're not properly, you know, doing your pious duties because you're not getting the material benefit. You know what I'm saying? So the results are looked at by your material benefit rather than by your spiritual benefit. You know what I'm saying? Like when people go, they're really well, nicely dressed and everything like that, but it's not as much necessarily of just what you have. You just wear your best. It also has that social element, you know? And so then someone who's doing well materially, then they must be religious, right? And if you were looking at the spiritual element, unless it's so extremely spiritual element that you would call them a saint, then you just say that they're, you know, not materially prosperous, they're just sentimental. Yes.
Is this because of a lack of understanding of reincarnation and karma?
Lack of an understanding of reincarnation. Yeah, that would add to it. That would add to it. But still it's just a lack of full understanding and focus on prema.
Hmm.
Right. Yeah. In other words, if you're taking persons that are not necessarily well engaged, and you're trying to bring them up to the platform, then the first element is just that they're properly situated on the Naimittic platform. At least they're doing something proper, right? They're doing pious activity. Then from there you try to get them to the Nitya platform. Right? Vaishnavism does that both simultaneously, but the focus is always on the Nitya. Otherwise, then someone will get bewildered. So,
it was said earlier that the duties of a kshatriya, that's the naimittic, and then connected with Krishna becomes Nitya Dharma.
Yes, it means the connection is Nitya Dharma. You're still engaging naimittic. You know what I'm saying? That's why we use the word spiritualized. It's not that the kshatriya dharma is spiritual, it becomes spiritualized. Because it's spiritualized, because the reason one's a kshatriya is not because that's your eternal nature. You know what I'm saying? It's not like Maharaj Ugrasena. That's his rasa with Krishna, is that he's a, you know, in the parental ras within the kshatriya culture. So that is an expansion of his, or manifestation of the form of his love. You understand? So that's there. Her mother Jashoda, she's, you know, a family member that has child, right? So that would be, in the normal case, the naimittic. You're engaging that, but that's an expansion of her rasa, eternal rasa. Here it may be one's swargiya rasa, you know, the heavenly rasa, but that's there only because of the modes. Last lifetime it was different, next lifetime it'll be different. Right? So that's why it's not given the prominence that it is in the spiritual world. But the point is it is where the consciousness is. So therefore that's what's engaged. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like a good cook goes into the kitchen. There's hardly any paraphernalia or any good items there. But he uses those. But when he gets the opportunity, then he goes out and gets good stuff. You understand? So the point is, the jiva is in the material world, so this is what you have. You use it. And then when you come to the platform of what he mentioned in the last chapter, the Sarup Siddhi, then use that to serve Krishna. Because still the point is even you have the Sarup Siddhi, you still have to use it in Krishna's service. Right? Does that make sense? Because, as pointed out, that's how we got here in the first place, is we had the spiritual situation, but we didn't use it for Krishna. Therefore, if you're not going to use it for Krishna, why should you have the spiritual facilities? So you're giving the naimittic facilities. Does that make sense? Yes?
Can we say that anicca dharma and manicca dharma are men?
Not necessarily. The anitya would be, but the naimittic, on one level depends. If it's based on the Vedic literatures, then it comes down from the Lord. So it's not man-made, because technically only God can establish religion. But it's designed for the particular person according to their interest or taste, right? Because then it'll be based on scriptures that will be given by the Lord. Even if someone makes up his own philosophy, it's still the modes of nature that give him the particular intelligence and ideas. So it's not that he's made it up. It's like every Kali Yuga, you'll have, you know, all these variety of bogus philosophies. You know what I'm saying? You know, just this life, it means this Kali Yuga, you know, most of them seem to come out of Gaul, you know, somehow or another. But, you know, other Kali Yugas, they'll come out of somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? The Italians will come up with it. Or, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, this time somehow the French are given the opportunity. Right? So, that makes sense. So it's just, these are there, just like, means Indra is a post. He always acts in that basic way. So that's why we can just in the Puranas say Indra. and goes on, and we will see it as a consistent mentality. Though many times those stories, when it's giving about Indra, those are different Indras, right? Because there's 14 of them in one day of Brahma, right? And that's just as daytime. Night, there aren't any. You know what I'm saying? So in all these different stories where Indra does all these crazy things, it's a different one. What happened with Krishna 5,000 years ago, that will be the same one. But anything before that, much of the time, if it's in with this cycle, okay. But it has to be within 72 cycles. If it's before that, it's a different Indra. You know what I'm saying? So the position is there. The seven sages are positions. The Pajapatis are positions. Right? You know, all these things of, how you say, was it Vaisheshika and Gautama, Patanjali, Jaimini, these are positions. Right? Is that these are ways that the jiva can think. So therefore, somebody has that kind of qualification, they take that position. Does that make sense? So, but, you know, this lifetime it has to be this person who has this name or that name. You know, in the modern, in the Vedic, then generally, they, you know, it always has the standard names. But does that make sense? Yeah.
We can say that
Varnashrama
comes under
Naimittika. Varnashrama is, but if it's engaged in the Lord's service, then it takes on the qualities of Nitya. Sannyasi Thakur said with folded hands, "Dear Master, I am realizing the incomparable excellence of the pure Vaishnavism, and I perceive the deficiency of the monistic philosophy propounded by Sri Shankaracharya. Yet I cannot refrain from asking you this question. Is Advaita Siddhi, the state of oneness attained by merging with the impersonal Supreme, any different from the Mahabhav that Sri Chaitanya embodied and exhibited?" It's taking two extremes. Paramahamsa Prem Das Babaji prostrated himself respectfully upon hearing the name of Sri Shankaracharya. He said, "My dear son, always remember this. Shankara Shakshad. Sri Shankaracharya is Lord Shiva himself. Sri Shankaracharya is the spiritual preceptor of all the Vaishnavas, and for this reason Sri Chaitanya has acclaimed him as an Acharya, great preceptor. Sri Shankaracharya has reinstated the pristine glory of the Vedas by transforming nihilistic voidism into monistic Brahmanism." Right? So he's brought back the position of the Vedas. Otherwise the Vedas were not in a position. Right? They were avoided because people were misusing them. So then the curas then removed them from using them. Then, having calmed down where it's been so long that they don't have those same concepts, then Shankaracharya reintroduced the Vedic literatures again in their position. But to do that, because everyone was nihilist, then he did it by creating this monistic Brahmanism. They're following the Brahminical culture, but their concept is monistic. Right, because that would be not so much different from the concept of the Buddhists. Right, you say it's Brahman instead of it's a void. But they say that there is no soul, there is no world, and the Mayavadis say exactly the same thing. The only difference is when it comes to the final stage, the Buddhists will say there's nothing. And the Shankarites will say there is Brahman. Right, so it stays within the Vedic conception. Does that make sense? Because everything is Brahman, they just don't distinguish between it. Right? Does that make sense? Like, there's this rock Brahman, and there's this other rock Brahman. Right? So they're both Brahman, but there is a difference between the two. Right? Like that. "He laid a firm foundation upon which Sri Ramanujacharya and Sri Madhvacharya later constructed the grand edifice of pure Vaishnava philosophy. Therefore, he is one of the greatest benefactors of the Vaishnava religion. Because otherwise, if they come in, then they have to completely establish the Vedas. But Shankaracharya already established the Vedas. So now you could take them from following the Vedas, you know, on that Brahminical platform to following it on the Vaishnava platform. Yeah. Up to the stage of mukti, the Vaishnavas agree with Sri Shankaracharya on many philosophical points. Prabhupada makes this point up also. Is for the Brahmavadis up to the point of liberation, what we say and what they say basically is the same. Any difference is because they consider it to be the final platform. So because of that, there's some elements that they bring down and they pollute this, you know, the general application. But as far as you're going to, by engaging your activities without a desire for results, that's how you'll get liberation. Naishkarmya gives liberation. Right? You follow your prescribed duties without a desire to result, you'll get liberation. So that's common. That's why you'll see is that we'll talk about naishkarmya, but we're talking about naishkarmya because the result is for Krishna. Right? But if you go and hear the Mayavadis speak, they will also talk about naishkarmya. But it's just doing your activities, you know, just because you're supposed to do them. And this way then you get liberated and get situated on the Brahman platform. Right? So their situation on the Brahman platform isn't for the purpose of performing devotional service on that stage. Right? So that's why it's just left at mukti. We will call that stage Brahma-bhuta. It's a stage of liberation, but it's a stage of liberation that's being engaged in the Lord's service. Okay, footnote 7. The Vaishnavas and Sri Shankaracharya share the understanding that the chit vastu, spiritual existence, is super mundane and transcendental to the subtle and gross material bodies of the external material nature. They're also of the same opinion regarding the spiritual nature of the jiva. They agree too that liberation means giving up one's attachment to the material world. Sri Shankaracharya has also taught that a soul purifies his consciousness by worshipping the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari, after which he attains mukti. Right? So that's there. But it's by worshipping the Lord, then you purify yourself, you attain mukti. But then they leave it at that and then disregard the Lord. You know, the Lord, Guru, anything that they've gotten themselves there. But for us, is that situates you there. Now you can very nicely worship the Lord. In other words, you've worshipped the Lord from the Naimittic platform. But now, by worshipping the Lord there, it brings you to the Nitya platform. Now you can even better worship the Lord. Right? But once their only goal is to get to that Nitya platform, once they get there, then they give up the worship. Right? That's the... Keep going? No. What Sri Shankaracharya remains silent about, however, are the wonderful realizations the jiva experiences after obtaining mukti. Yeah. This is because he was confident that once the jivas were set on the path of liberation, attainable by worshipping the Supreme Hari, they would gradually develop a taste and attachment for devotional service and ultimately become pure devotees of the Lord. So that was the idea, they would take that up. But they were so attached to it on the material platform that they remained there. That's why he had final instruction is Bhaja Govinda. You worship, you know, worship Govinda, right? But then they're not catching that this is what he does. In Guru Vayur, you know, it's everybody there is a Shankarite. But they take the deities out of the elephant procession, and for 3 hours their elephant procession goes. There's a group there doing kirtan that all they chant is Hare Krishna for the 3 hours. Right? So it's all about the deity, worshipping the Lord and all that, but they see that will give us liberation and they think that's the end of it. But the idea is that they'll worship Krishna and then they'll get a taste for that and then they'll move beyond that. Then they'll move into the natural devotional. But unfortunately it doesn't seem to be a popular understanding. Yes.
So could we say that Sri Shankaracharya didn't succeed?
No, he succeeded because there are those who... I mean, just as you had tons of Buddhists, there's people with, like, you know, the same mentality, but now it's that connected with the Vedas. Mm. Right? In other words, that impersonalistic element. You have those who, you know, in reality want it connected with the Vedas, you know, but they're on actually on the Brahman platform. There's those who want to consider they're there, but are actually atheists. Mm-hmm. And then there's those that wouldn't want to use that, that just want to be pure atheists. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But the point is that even being on that transcendental platform is not enough. It's devotional service that makes that platform valuable. Mm. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So did Shankaracharya in his lifetime, he displays some pure devotional symptoms in his own life?
Well, that's there, that Bhaja Govinda, that instruction. But he wrote a book that's all about Radha and Krishna's pastimes and the transcendental position of them and everything. And if you ask the Shankarites, they'll kind of quietly agree that the book's written, you know. But they can't understand why he would write a book like that. Doesn't make any sense to them. So rather than think he's the Acharya, he wrote this book, then, you know, we should take this seriously. So he gave indication, in other words, from what I understand, I mean, definitely he established the worship in Guruvayur, you know, the deity worship there. Some say he established the worship in Puri, right, on the tantric, the principle, you know. So, but the point is that you're worshipping the deity to develop attraction to the Lord, right? It's like that. He's established Harinam Kirtan, he's written books on Radha and Krishna. You know, so there's so much there that one could take that, but at the same time, for someone who doesn't, then they can kind of miss all that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's difficult. The option is given for those who want to. In other words, follow means you follow the Vedic position, you know, for devotional service, or you're following the Vedic position for Brahman realization, right? But it's just whether it's Bhagavan or Brahman or Paramatma there. But then you can also be following for the idea that it's this illusory concept, this voidistic concept. That can be either based on the Vedas or not based, you know, Shankara, or not based on the Vedas, the Buddhism. Right? Does that make sense? Because otherwise, before Shankara, you had the impersonal paths. You had the interpretations of Vedanta that were impersonal. Like that. You know, like the four Kumaras or Sukadeva Goswami. There are those persons. But their position is that it's accepting God's position, but only as Brahman. Like that. So that oneness doesn't mean that something else is neglected. If we say everything's Brahman, it just means whatever there, everything is Brahman. Not that there's Brahman and all this is illusion. That's why they're called Mayavadi, because whatever is here is illusion. Brahmavadi, it's everything's Brahman. They'll claim that, yes, we're Brahmavadis, but they're not actually real Brahmavadis. Because even if they're real Brahmavadis, if everything's Brahman, that means the illusion is also Brahman. You know what I'm saying? Mm. And then if everything's Brahman, why, and there's so much variety, why would Brahman need to have variety? You know, that's because Brahman is a person. Right? And Brahman has his in pastimes in that with his, you know, his energy Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? He's Shaktiman Brahman, then there's Shakti Brahman. So because of interaction, that's why there's variety.
And you could also say Brahman is without qualities. Where do these qualities come from?
Yes, of course. How do you get something superior out of something inferior? That's why Prabhupada makes the point: is Brahman's already a fallen position. You can't fall from Brahman. That's, it means there isn't anything else other than Brahman. How do you fall from Brahman?
Where do you fall to?
Yeah, where do you fall through? Yeah, it's just there isn't there. So it's already a fallen position because it's only sat.
Yeah.
Where's Chit and Ananda? Sat, Chit, Ananda, that's the actual position. Only Sat, that's a fallen position. Mm. So you can't fall from Brahman. You know what I'm saying? You can fall from the platform under realization of Brahman, but you can't get away from Brahman. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like the thief is trying to hide from the state. Where is he hiding?
In
the state. Yeah, it says you can't get away from that. It's just a matter of whether you recognize the position of the state or whether you don't. That's all. So do you recognize God's kingdom or you don't recognize God's kingdom? Does that make sense? Okay. Unfortunately, those who ponder only the external aspects of Sri Shankaracharya's teachings are diverted from the Vaishnava path. So the external. They're not actually getting into the position of the living entity, the relationship, all these different things. So he'll talk about them, but they won't actually focus on them. So because of that, then they remain Mayavadis. They don't move on to become Vaishnavas, because the actual path is meant to make them Vaishnavas. But they just somehow or another don't quite.
They're just slow.
Very slow, yeah. Because we can see is there is this element there. Is otherwise, if it didn't work, how is it Sannyasi Thakur is here? Because it brought him to the point of being on the Brahman platform and noticing that there's something beyond that. Something that gives a taste that is not being given by, because he knows the material, that's been given up. He's now understood the spiritual, but this is the taste beyond that. So he's into what is that? So that's what's supposed to happen to all the Mayavadis. But unfortunately, it's only, you know, it happened to him. It happened to, you know, is it
Kumara,
Sukadev, also, you know, in Varanasi with Lord Chaitanya. Prakashananda, Saraswati, or Bhattacharya. You know, that when they saw the other, then they got. But that was, you know, only by the Lord's grace. So much of the time, most aren't interested, so they don't get.
Is the association.
Yeah, because otherwise sometimes you come across, but then people don't want to move forward. From a certain viewpoint, Advaita Siddhi and the Mahabhava of Prema may seem identical. However, the narrow understanding of spiritual oneness in Advaita Siddhi is certainly different from the devotional ecstasy of Prema. First, we must properly analyze the subject of Prema. Right? Because you see, there's that element of the oneness there. But there in Advaita Siddhi, it means there's no individuality. But the point of Prema is there is individuality, but it's the commonness of the mood is so great, therefore it generates the Mahabhava. Does that make sense? But the other one, it's not considering that emotional interaction. Right? It's not individuals interacting, it's just individuals being one individual. So it's not quite complete there. There's no interaction. Even if it's the proper Brahmavad, it's just all Brahman. So, but there's no specific emotional interaction between the elements of Brahman. So it'll never be the same. And then here he's talking about Advaita Siddhi. He may even be talking about what's presented by the Mayavadis. So then there is no distinction of individuality. Right? In Brahmavad, it can be there's individual, but it doesn't matter. It's all the same thing. You know what I'm saying? It's just like this. What do you call all this together?
Brahman.
That's Brahman, but all these, what do you call them? Rocks. But you're not worried about the individual rock. They're rocks. So the Brahmavadi, even though you may have, if I say, but it's made up of individual rocks, and individual, so one rock, another rock, that makes all the rocks. And you'll say, yes, you'll agree, but what's the focus? Focus is on rocks. So the Brahmavadi, the focus is on Brahman. There may be individual particles of Brahman that make the living entity. But that's not what you're focusing on. You're focusing on Brahman. Does that make sense? That's why when they get the taste in devotional service, they don't have a problem that there's individual Brahman, because now the individual Brahman is interactive, right, on the devotional platform. But otherwise they're not interactive on the material platform. But then they come to the stage of being not interactive. Then they become interactive on the spiritual platform. So that's the idea of these paths, are meant to bring one to the platform of Vaishnavism. But it's not necessarily that people do that because they get caught up in the externals. Does that make sense? You know, devotees will get distracted by externals. It's just that's the conditioning. But because of the power of devotional service, it still purifies. But on the other, you're just dealing with the pious qualities. So there's no devotional service there. So being distracted by the externals, what's going to adjust that? So it doesn't happen. You know, rare cases, we see it does, but that's what it's for.
The conditioned nature is born of the modes of material nature.
Yes.
Like the gross body and the subtle body also. The subtle body, it can be purified, but so then the nature, the mental nature stays the same, but it's purified.
Yes.
Or it can be, you know, like kshatriya is more passion and greediness, maybe kshatriya.
No, it's not a matter of that. Just like, let's say, let's take a potato. Okay? We won't use olive on this one. Okay, now, can you make vodka out of a potato?
Yes.
No, but I'm just saying is...
Yes.
The Russians are very good at it. Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's very expensive rotten potato juice. That's basically what you're paying. Right? Okay? So... Now that what you would say is not necessarily a very sattvic application of potato-ness, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, better than that is we just cook the potato into something, you know, and just eat it, right? That would be considered better. But because means it's being it's proper use of the potato, but it's being misapplied in that it's being used just for us. Okay? Then you can use the potato to cook it for Krishna. Does that make sense? So that'll be the difference, is you can use something impiously, piously, or devotionally. So impiously generally means it's not really what you're supposed to be using it for. You know what I'm saying? You're supposed to plant the old potatoes, not make a drink out of them. Okay, now he's going to analyze prema. Krishna prema is the dharma by which all transcendental entities are eternally attached to the supreme transcendental entity, Sri Krishna Chandra. Inherent in prema are three things. The asvadaka, the relisher, the asvadya, the object being relished, and asvadan, the act of relishing. Right? If the relisher and the relished are to merge into absolute oneness through the exchanges of prema, then prema could not be nitya siddha, eternally self-perfected truth, right? Because otherwise then their difference would be a temporary element. And so when they actually merge, then that would be the element. But the problem is you have to have these three things. Right? So you have to have who's relishing, who is the object of relish, and the relishing itself. But if all that merges into one, then where is the rasa? Where is the prema? Right? And that, does that make sense? So that means that those three things that make prema would not be nitya. Right?
So the Mayavada philosophy, there can't actually be consciousnesses if everything merges into one Brahman.
No, there can be consciousness, but it's only consciousness of Sat, of eternality.
Of itself?
Just of the eternalness of it, yeah. But Chit means then there's the knowledge and activity. So that's what they avoid. And Ananda, then the experience that comes from that. Though they talk about Brahmananda.
Mm.
But the point is the Ananda that comes from, you know, just existing is not as much as the Ananda of interaction.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? No, because the ananda of doing nothing is only interesting when you've been doing too much.
Yeah.
And it's a disturbance. So therefore doing nothing seems interesting. But as soon as you are not anymore plagued by the problem of the anxiety of action, then you get bored and want to perform action again.
So because they don't have bhakti, that's why action means trouble.
Yes, for them, because in the material world, every action ultimately ends in trouble, right? So they're smart enough to understand that, but not smart enough to understand the nature of the jiva. You know that he's actually and the nature of Brahman is that there's the supreme Brahman as a personality, and they are an individual personality. So they don't know that. So that's chit, right? And so then that interaction, that ananda, that's actually the dynamic. That's what the soul's looking for. Right, in other words, if the Brahman platform, exclusively doing nothing, was the standard of the living entity, why would so many living entities be absorbed in karma? Right, why would that be there? The natural would be to the other. And then a few would get into karma. But it's the other way around, because activity is the nature of the living entity. The problem is that spiritual nature is the natural position of the living entity. And material engagement, that's the temporary position of the living entity. Yes?
Is somebody who's attracted by inaction then, like sometimes you would call them lazy?
Yeah, you could say sometimes they call them lazy. Depends what circle. It means, in other words, if you're in that circle, you'd probably use a different name. You know, the cool guys or, you know. Yeah, but outside that circle, probably lazy would be a nice word they would use. Standard, I think a British, old British term is wastrel. That's what they would call them.
What's the difference?
Or you would add some other, you know, definers to the word lazy, like bum. You know.
What's the difference between the lazy person and then the one with this contamination of, jnana?
He's active in the activities that generate liberation. But he's inactive in the areas of, you know, emotions and relationships and like that. So he's following the mechanics of liberation, but he's not understanding the principle of relationship. Because he thinks all relationships eventually won't be there, because if the taster and the tasted then become one, then there's, you know...
No taste.
Yeah, there's no taste. So that's actually what the Buddhists are saying. The taste of no taste. That's how they talk.
Is that the impersonalist contamination of Prabhupada's in Prabhupada's pranayama mantra?
Yes, that's nirvishesha shunyavad. Nirvishesha just means is the Mayavadi concept. Shunyavad is the Buddhist concept. So it's the same thing. Yeah. If the relisher and relished were to merge into absolute oneness through the exchanges of prema, then prema would not be nitya-siddha, eternally perfected truth. If, however, a dvaita siddhi is defined as the pure state of the living entity, in union with his natural original spiritual nature, and thus untainted by any material contact, then prema and a dvaita siddhi indicate the same region of transcendental existence. In other words, if it's defined as that's the original nature of the living entity, untainted by material contact, right? But you have an entity. Then Advaita and Prema are defining the same situation. But they're not defining because Advaitavad is only dealing with Sat, right? Existence is the situation, right? So it's not dealing beyond that. Right? Yeah. Does that make sense? So it's only dealing with situation. The Maya bodies only deal with situation. But prema deals with the spiritual, same spiritual situation, but then the activities and the results of that.
Hmm.
Right? In other words, the sat is common, but the advaitavad doesn't have chit and ananda, while the prema does. So that's why he uses in the same region of transcendental existence, because there is no activity in the Advaita city. However, the contemporary scholars of the Shankaracharya school stubbornly claim that Advaita city is the absolute ultimate goal of spiritual realization, as opposed to being the situation for the realization. You understand?
Yeah.
Prema is the situation is Advaita city, but the goal is that relationship with the Lord. Does that make sense? That's the difference. Because it's not saying that the living entity and the Lord are one. They're saying the living entity is in its natural spiritual position, free from material contamination. Right? Okay. However, the contemporary scholars of Shankaracharya school stubbornly claim that Advaita city is the absolute ultimate goal of spiritual realization, wherein the living entities become indistinguishably one with Brahman. Right? It means one on the Brahman platform, but they're indistinguishably. Right? You know, we use one because they never become. They're always Brahman, always have that. So at the same time, they're still not the Lord. He's Lord Brahman. We're Jiva Brahman. They describe the transcendental conditions of prema as maya, material illusion. In this way, they misconstrue the actual Vedic truth. Their philosophical aberration extirpates the quality of eternality in prema. Hence, the Vaishnavas concluded that such philosophy is non-Vedic. So actually, that puts it into being anitya.
Hmm.
Though it's using Vedic evidence, it's still anitya dharma. You know what I'm saying? So you can get all three of these either using Vedic or non-Vedic.
Mm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But the best is when you're using the Vedic and the Vaishnava.
Yeah.
That gives you the best. Right?
Mm.
The most clear on this. These confused followers of Sri Shankaracharya are unable to grasp the esoteric import of his philosophy and ascribe an incorrect interpretation to his statements. They can't really understand, so they just take the external form, right? Because actually, you know, maya means that they're absorbed in energy, so they can't actually understand, you know, the actual masculine elements of the Supreme Lord. So they miss that. Because they think it's one. They don't understand the oneness of the Lord and his energy. Right?
Wouldn't the Vedas also be illusion?
And yeah, for them they're illusion.
But how
and you know what's fun is them talking about how it's all illusion is also illusion.
Yeah.
But they're somehow they're very happy to sit around and be in the illusion of talking about Mayavad philosophy and think they're doing a good thing by telling you about it. But the point is if it's all illusion, what's the meaning for preaching? It's all because everyone's Brahman anyway. So there's no need to preach. So therefore, you know, if they start speaking, that's illusion. So they shouldn't be preaching.
So that's, shouldn't be doing anything.
That's the upside of their philosophy. They should be keeping their mouth shut and staying out of the way. But unfortunately, they're not, so they're giving problems. Their misinterpreted version of Advaita Siddhi and the Vaishnava acceptance of prema are philosophically poles apart. Right? So they have a misinterpreted version of Advaita Siddhi. Because we say one and different, there's the concept of oneness. The point is it's also the concept of difference, but they can't see the two of them on the spiritual platform. And then that's why Lord Chaitanya's is is even more perfect, because then the oneness and difference is simultaneous. Right, you know. Sri Chaitanya's instructions on the process of relishing prema and his teachings in general are, as exemplified by his character and pastimes, are all absolute and transcendental. They embody the acme of perfection, the highest stage of Advaita Siddhi. Mahabhava means they're the highest stage of that, because you're coming to the transcendental platform. So it's the highest stage of the transcendental platform, because within transcendental, there's variety. Right? So there's the Brahman variety, the Paramatma variety, and the Bhagavan variety. And then within Bhagavan, then you also have the levels of you know, Vaidhi or Rag, you know, or pure and pure unalloyed. Right? So you have all these different aspects. So it's the topmost. That's why it said it has not been given before. Mahabhava is an ecstatic transformation of unalloyed prema. One experiences extreme divine exaltation in loving Krishna, relationship with whom produces an individual and intrinsic effusion of sublime ecstatic emotion, both in the relisher and the object relished. The intimate relationship between these two acquires an extraordinary and wonderful presence. In contrast, the inconsistent Mayavad philosophy is unable to make any contribution in the true understanding of prema. Right? In other words, they don't have anything to offer. Right? Its position as being technically anitya, it doesn't have anything to offer to the position of nitya. Right? So they can't actually add or define or give any. So in other words, you know, talking about how to get to the liberated platform, fine, but anything beyond that, they don't have anything to offer, because they haven't understood the teachings of Shankara. Right? And even there, it's expected then they'll take up the Vaishnav line. Right? So then Shankara, instead of being head of the Advaitavad, would be Shankara, the head of the Vaishnav Sampradaya. Right? You know, like that. But basically, they didn't make the switch. At this point, Sannyasi Thakur, speaking very respectfully, said, "Dear Master, now I am fully convinced that this Mayavad philosophy is indeed false and inept. By your mercy, all my doubts have been dissipated, and I am feeling a strong urge to insistently discard my Mayavad sannyasi apparel, or instantly discard my Mayavadi sannyasi apparel." Babaji Maharaj said, "Dear sir, my advice in this regard is that one should be dispassionate about one's outer dress. After inner cleansing, one is naturally inspired to conduct oneself in accordance with the behavior of saintly persons, and thus one's outward appearance will be free from blemishes in the natural course of events." Right? In other words, it's not an emotional element that, oh, this is so bad and that's why you change the position of that. It's that, no, it's just that's the natural position, what you should do. Right? Because otherwise, when things are done in a passionate way, it always ends up as a problem. But dispassionate just means that when it's just natural, comes from the internal purification. Because now he has the understanding. So when that purification is also there, then it will just be the natural position. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So one passionately adjusts from brahmachari to grihastha, or passionately from grihastha to vanaprastha, and then passionately again from vanaprastha back to grihastha, or, you know, to sannyasa, and then from there back into, you know, these kind of things are not worthwhile. It's just what, by purification, it just naturally progresses. Yes?
So these Mayavadi sannyasi apparel, it is the same that Vaishnava sannyasi dress?
Basically. It just means that you're wearing, in other words, the sannyas dress that is saffron in color. Right? The natural dress is the sannyasi dress without the saffron color. That's all. Babaji is a form of sannyas, right? But it's just without designation. Well, sannyas then is with designation because it has a position within the Varnashram system. The Babaji doesn't have it. Is that what it is? It's not that he doesn't have a position because he doesn't want to follow it and he has his own idea. It's that he doesn't follow the Varnashram system because he has no need for it. Right? Just like the Naistika Brahmachari doesn't get married because he doesn't have a need for it. Right? The Upakurvana Brahmachari gets married because he has a need for it. Like that. It's just a matter of whether there's need or not. But Varnashram means then the need is being addressed through Shastra. And if we don't follow the Varnashram, then that means the need is being addressed according to our own whims. Right? So the mode of ignorance. Sannyasi Thakur understood the importance of Babaji Maharaj's words and refrained from further mention of the subject of dress. With folded hands, he addressed Babaji Maharaj, "Dear Master, after listening to your teachings, I have realized that in Vaishnava Dharma, pure love of Sri Krishna is alone considered love, and this indeed is the Nitya Dharma of the Jiva. Nevertheless, different countries practice different religions. How should I think about them?" Right. So in other words, love, when we say love, means that it is love for Krishna and that interaction between the individual living entity and Krishna. Right? So it'll always be persons. Right? But he's saying, okay, but now how do you define these in other places? Babaji Maharaj said, and here comes the answer to your point. Right? "My dear sir, the jiva has but one dharma, known as the Vaishnava dharma. No one can artificially create a new jiva dharma. The unblemished, pristine love for the Supreme Absolute Whole experienced by the jiva is defined as jiva dharma. That's just the natural dharma of the living entity. However, the jiva possesses a variety of cultural habits and natural traits which binds his religious practices to certain material conformities, thus making his true dharma appear refracted." Right? Means, in other words, he has that natural dharma, but because of his own cultural conditioning, then it becomes refracted into something else. Right? Because the refraction means it's, you see something, but it's not exactly where it is. It's off. You think, oh, I see it, it's there, but actually it's over here. So that's the... "Therefore, to free Jiva Dharma from misconception and bring into focus the pristine standards of actual Dharma, the Jiva's true religion has been named Vaishnava Dharma. To the same degree that Vaishnava Dharma practices are present in other religious systems, those religions are to be considered pure." Right? To the same degree. So how much is there? It's the degree of purity. Not that there's something there, therefore it's completely pure, or there's something missing, therefore it's absolutely useless. No. To the degree the natural Vaishnava Dharma is there, in other words, without the refraction of their cultural conditioning, then it's pure. Right? So each one has to be taken individually and looked at what is there. So that means then, as we said before, how you define it, just where it stands, is... what's the position of God, the jiva, the material world, their relationship? What's your process of elevation? What's the ultimate goal? That's how you're going to see what is actually the Vaishnava Dharma, or the natural religion of the living entity, and what has been tacked on due to their conditioning. "Some time ago in Vrindavan, I humbly placed a question to Srila Sanatan Goswami, who is an eternal and confidential associate of the Supreme Lord. My query was, is the concept of..." I don't even know how to say it. Ishk. Ishk. Yeah, so it's not a Hindi song. It's not, because isn't there a movie like that?
Yeah, Ishq is a movie.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So Ishq just means, okay. Ishq. Ishq. Couldn't they just put a K? Same thing. English is just as bad, so like that. An Arabic word used in Islam, the same as prema, or is there a difference? Okay. Yeah, because Sanatana Goswami is the one who knows this. He knows the Arabic. He knows all these things, so he can define. Okay, so their concept of prema and the Sanskrit word, you know, ishq and prema, are they the same, or is there a difference? I shall now report Srila Sanatana Goswami's words. Yes, the word ishq indeed means prema. Right now he's quoting from Sanatana Goswami. However, in common terminology, it is now come to imply mundane love affairs, right? And that was 500 years ago, right? You know, let alone in Bollywood, you know what it is. The Muslim religious scholars were unable to understand accurately pure transcendence. As a result, they now refer to the emotions of the subtle body and the physical urges of the gross body as ishq, their misconception of prema. Further, they have failed to perceive not only the pure spiritual nature, but also the truth about the jiva's spontaneous and spotless love of Krishna. In all their religious texts, I have never come across discussions upon divine transcendental love. It's just referred to, there's no discussions. Conspicuously, the spiritual emotion of prema is present and thoroughly elucidated in Vaishnav Dharma alone. Right? So only Vaishnav Dharma actually gets into it. Others talk about it, but that it exists, but they don't actually discuss what it means. Because in Christianity, okay, you say, yes, you develop your love for God. What does that look like? What do you do? You can see symptoms. A person's acting like a mad person. Okay, great. But what is the person actually doing? You know what I'm saying? What's the relationship? So that's not being described. Knowledge of pure love of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is missing in all other religious literatures. Pure love for Sri Krishna is described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2, Dharma Parayojita Kaitavo. Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavat Purana propounds the highest truth. Footnote 8. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2, religion includes four primary subjects, namely pious activities, economic development, satisfaction of the senses, and finally liberation from material bondage. Irreligious life is a barbarous condition. Indeed, human life begins when religion begins. In other words, basically what's been said here in a very pleasant way is, if you're not following Varnashram, you know, you're not human, really. You're a barbarian, right? Like that. That's the... Right, because religion means dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. So when those are done according to Vedas, then you're human. So to that degree that you're doing those, maybe you're doing those not from the Vedic viewpoint, but at least there's some consideration. Then that brings you closer to, you know, just like you're saying religion before, how much of the actual nitya element is there, then is how actual pure it is. Right? Like that. Eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating are the four principles of animal life. These are common both to animals and to human beings. But religion is the extra function of the human being. Without religion, human life is no better than animal life. Therefore, right, you understand the logic? Means animal, the elements of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, the humans do, the animals do. But the function of religion, that's what's special to the human being. So the human being's not doing that. What's the difference between him and the animal?
Polished cats and dogs.
Yes. Polished. Yes. Therefore, in human societies, there is some form of religion which aims at self-realization and which makes reference to man's eternal relationship with God. Right, so he's saying in human societies. that they have some reference of this, but there's not much is presented. In the lower stages of human civilization, there's always competition to lord it over the material nature. Or, in other words, there is a continuous rivalry to satisfy the senses. Driven by such consciousness, man turns to religion. He thus performs pious activities or religious functions in order to gain something material. But if such material gains are obtainable in other ways, then so-called religion is neglected. This is the situation in modern civilization. Man is thriving economically, so at present he is not very interested in religion. Churches, mosques, or temples are now practically vacant. Men are more interested in factories, shops, and cinemas than in religious places, which were erected by their forefathers. This practically proves that religion is performed for some economic gains. Otherwise, it would be, just a natural part of their life. Economic gains are needed for sense gratification. Often, when one is baffled in the pursuit of sense gratification, he takes to salvation and tries to become one with the Supreme Lord. Consequently, all these states are simply different types of sense gratification. Right? So that's the lower form. It's always sense gratification. Because you're wanting money for sense gratification. They're not getting money for Dharma. Right? It's not that they're performing Dharma to get money to continue performing Dharma. They're performing Dharma to get money for sense gratification. Okay?
Confirmed.
Yeah.
It's a fallen condition.
Yes. It's also always interesting that it always chooses this time. But the devotees of the Lord rise above such competitions. They do not compete with the materialists because they are on the path back to Godhead where life is eternal and blissful. Such transcendentalists are non-envious and pure in heart. In the material world, everyone is envious of everyone else, and therefore there is competition. But the transcendental devotees of the Lord are not only free from material envy, but are all well-wishers to everyone, and they strive to establish a competitionless society with God in the center. It doesn't mean that people aren't performing and trying to develop, but it means that the competition is not meant for that. Okay, back to the top. The Vaishnav text, Srimad Bhagavatam. Delineates in detail this pure, sublime love of Krishna. A love without deceit or how you say that? Capriciousness. I forget which it was. Ford or General Motors had a car named
Capri.
Yeah. Oh, it's Capri. Yeah, but they would say Caprice in America. You don't mispronounce the. How is it American? Right? I am very sure that before Sri Chaitanya, no one had ever taught the science of pure love of God. Pure love of Godhead, Sri Krishna, as exhaustively as he. If my words inspire faith in you, then subscribe wholeheartedly to this philosophy. After hearing the instructions of Srila Sanatana Goswami, I respectfully offered him my obeisances. Right? In other words, others have described it, but no one as fully as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Mm-hmm. Even the other Vaishnava's lines haven't given it to that much degree. Truly motivated by these instructions, Sannyasi Thakur immediately fell at the feet of Babaji Maharaj in humble gratitude. Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji Maharaj continued, "My dear devotee, I am about to reply to your second question about how the Dharma of the Jiva can be eternal if it is intrinsic to his created constitution. Please listen attentively. Sanskrit terms such as Jiva Srishti, creation and birth of the Jiva, and Jiva Gatam, the formation of the Jiva, etc., are used in a mundane sense. Material word meanings evoke mundane feelings and impressions. Material time within this illusory energy field has three conditions, past, present, and future. Time in the spiritual world has a singular aspect, it is always in the presence, whereas past and future are absent. The Jiva and the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, exist in that spiritual time. Right? So if we're asking someone to act in the present, you know, we recommend the mode of goodness. That's because mode of goodness means you act in the present. If you're acting in the present, that's the position that they act in the spiritual world. So that's the natural way that one would want to act. So sometimes devotees get bent out of shape about the mode of goodness. But the point is that's how they act in the spiritual world. So if you want to interact with Krishna, that's the platform on which to do it. You perform your activities from that platform, that's the most natural that it will be pure devotional service. Because otherwise, if it's done with passion or ignorance, it will be mixed. You know, so that's what's absent in the spiritual world. There is no such thing as mixed devotional service. It's always pure. Right? Somebody said? The Jiva and the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, exist in that spiritual time. Hence, the Jiva is eternally and indestructibly. Eternal and indestructible. And his Dharma, Krishna Prema, is also eternally present. The mundane conditions of birth, growth, decay, etc. are brought about by the influence of material time. But the eternal root, form, and Dharma of the Jiva have already been determined before his entrance into the material energy. The Jiva and his Dharma are therefore both eternally present and indestructible. Right, so one already had his position. As we were saying, is somehow or another he got involved. Like that. I have explained all this to you in words, but you can only understand the true meaning to the extent you have realized and experienced the unalloyed spiritual realm. I am giving just indications. You must perceive their purport in deep meditation. Mundane logic and argument will not enable you to properly comprehend these subjects. The more you can free your faculty of experience from material bondage, the more you will be able to experience the spiritual domain. First, you should cultivate realization of your pure spiritual identity and practice chanting Krishna's name purely. Then your spiritual function known as Jiva Dharma will be clearly revealed. Right? Direct devotional service to Sri Krishna can alone reawaken the self-perfected Jiva Dharma inherent within oneself. Right? In other words, one takes it up. Well, awakening it doesn't mean that it's not awakened, and you're still functioning in conditioned state. So that's what's called mixed. Because you're doing devotional service, at the same time there's still the element of conditioning. But as that awakening gets greater and greater, then the other one diminishes. Right? So that's the idea, until the material doesn't exist and it's only the transcendental position. Direct devotional service to Sri Krishna can alone reawaken the self-perfected Jiva Dharma inherent within oneself. So the direct is also the direct activities, chanting the holy name, those can awaken. The indirect, that's not going to. But still engaging in direct in the Lord's service, that itself is direct. You know what I'm saying? That aspect is direct, though the medium you're using is indirect. Right? Simply chant Hari Nam with full enthusiasm. This in itself is considered pure devotional service. After chanting regularly and offensively for even just a short time, one will experience a wonderful attraction to Hari Nam. Inebriated by Babaji's nectarian instruction, Sannyasi Thakur began to sing, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. He gently swayed to and fro in a stately dance, and immediately realized that he was acquiring ruchi, a sublime taste for chanting Hari Nam, right? Because before he was on Brahma Nishtha. But he had gotten to that position not by the devotional process, right? So the anarthas were removed that had got him to Nishtha, but he still, the elements of wanting to enjoy that position, right? Because Brahmananda means I want to enjoy the ananda, rather than I'm generating ananda for Krishna. That's prema. So now those are basically being removed, and now he's acquiring a taste for. So he's now moving to the stage of ruchi, right? And we saw, yeah, also is that those last stages of anartha. Means in other words, four out of six are basically accomplished and that brings you to nishtha. Right? Then becoming steady in the devotional practice. Not means nishtha, you're steady in devotional service, but your practices may not be steady. Right? Your sadhana sometimes is good, sometimes not, sometimes this, that. And also the distraction by the facilities that come from performing the devotional service. Those two may be there, but as you progress further, then those start to reduce. And then there's the element, then ruchi comes in. Because when ruchi comes, means all those have been removed. Right? Yes.
Are anartha and vritti and nishtha usually quite simultaneous?
It means there's overlap, because yeah, there's anartha and vritti is considered fully complete when you come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So when one is done, when one has gotten to the point of the first four of anartha and vritti being basically accomplished, that's the 60% where one can begin. The element of raganuga may arise at that time, but if it doesn't, then it will naturally arise when anartha nivritti is totally complete at Brahmabhuta, in other words, the stage of bhava. So the point is there it's complete, and you do have your form and everything to work with. If you're functioning with raganuga from nishta, means we have that mood is starting to rise, but you don't have your spiritual form. You understand? So to think about your spiritual form and serving Krishna in that, that's called sahajya.
Mm. Yeah.
You understand? So there's a difference between the Madhyama Raganuga and the Uttama Raganuga. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that. Like the younger girl thinks about what married people do in the way of get their house and how they're arranged and their families and this. So she'll think about all that. But she doesn't have. You understand? Understand? But when she's married, then she can think of all these and establish them. So it's just the natural.
How can you have a sakti without being raganuga?
A sakti.
Yeah, you're attached.
Means you're attached too, but you can still be attached to the rules. The residents of Vaikuntha are attached to Krishna because they're on the platform of prema.
Yeah. Okay.
But they like to express it through rules.
Okay.
Raganuga means you don't need to express it through rules.
Mm. Yeah.
You follow the rules, but it's not that you need the rule to be able to do it.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like the one person, he doesn't know how to really interact. You get there, he says this and that, he shakes hands, he does all the rules. He feels comfortable because he knows what will happen. Okay, now after doing that, then someone's going to allude to going and sitting down. You know, so whoever it comes up first, you know, depending on the relationship, then you go and sit, then you order things, then you do things, but not, you know, like this, and then, you know, then because you invite, you'll say you'll pay, and then all this, there's all these rules you go through. But the other one is you just do that, but it's more the exchange that you're into. So it's just natural, right? Those people you call, you know, gregarious, or, you know, some kind of naturally, you know, able to interact with. Others, you interact with, actually, but it's based on the rules. Right, if you remove the rules, they wouldn't know what to do. But the other ones, they talk nicely. So the form is still used. So that's why it's bewildering, because the Raganuga Sadhaka will use all the rules of Vaidhi. But it's not where, that's not the inspiration for the interaction. Right? But for the Vaidhi Sadhaka, he follows the rules because he's comfortable there, that's how he can express himself. Right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like you've gone there, you've taken darshan, you've gone around the deities, now it's like, okay, now this is the time to offer prayers. So that's why he's offering prayers then, because it's the time to offer. He wants to offer prayers.
Yeah.
He offers nice prayers, but he's offering then because that's what you're supposed to do. The other one sees the deities like that, he wants to offer prayers. You understand? So offering prayers is what you're supposed to do, but the one wants to offer prayers just that from the feeling. The other one is you're supposed to offer the prayers. Right? And he wants to do what's right, so he offers his prayers. Does that make sense? Also, the stately dancing is like how Prabhupada introduced, you know, the hands up and the fact that's stately dancing. That's always used, this term, if you read these translations. They go back to the old, and it uses stately. Falling at his guru's... And immediately realized he was acquiring ruchi, a sublime taste for chanting Hari Nam. Falling at his guru's lotus feet, he prayed, Prabhu, O friend of the destitute, please bestow your mercy upon this wretched soul. Child. We actually got through. Yeah. I wasn't sure because we got there and there's one sentence less than then we get the question. Okay, no, it works. Okay, so then tomorrow we start chapter 3. Naimittika Dharma is to be relinquished.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema. Does anybody know anything about these? Because there's
a partial set.